Train, your community resource podcast series. I am your conductor, Joseph Ward. And as always, riding with me, my homeboy, my ace, Mr. Patrick Irvin. What's going on, Pat? Pat, do you hear me, Pat? His mic messing up. The Freedom Train is sponsored by PACS Inc. That's PACTSINC. And remember, PACS Inc. is a black advocacy organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And for more information, make sure you visit www.PACSINC.org. And that's PACTSINC.org. And make sure you visit our website, our Freedom Train website, at www.freedomtrainradio.com. And that way you can listen to the playbacks of your favorite shows. You can go get more information about us, and you can learn about more people and listen to more shows. And you can also subscribe to the Freedom Train podcast on iTunes and the Google Play Music. And you can get the apps all on your phone. It's very convenient because, bam, we set the post, bam, come straight to your phone. And make sure you follow us on Instagram and Twitter at _FreedomTrain and like us on Facebook. And if you don't do none of that, then you ain't really cool. Well, while Pat get his mic together, he got a little technical issues. It's all good. We are interviewing today my brother from the same mother and same daddy, Mr. Wallace Ward. Excuse me, Arthur Wallace Ward. What's going on, Wallace?
How you doing, man? How you doing?
Hey, man. Hey, man. Thank you for being on the train today. You know how we do, man. I sit back, relax, and you know we're gonna have some fun today. So, while Pat getting his mic together, can you give us a little background information about you before we get into this interview?
Yeah, man. Born and raised right here in Tallahassee, Florida. Hometown boy. Started out over on the west side of town off of Lake Bradford, McCaskill Avenue. You know, we moved over to the south side of town over off of Putnam and back over to the west side of town, man. So, you know, from Pine View to Bellevue to Rickards High School, hometown boy with the TCC, and got a degree out there, and then matriculated on to FAMU to get a degree in healthcare management.
Okay, you got a degree in healthcare management for FAMU, and then you got into being an author. Okay. So, and you are the author of the book titled The Manuscript, correct?
Correct.
Okay, and we're going to, I don't want to, you know, spoil it, because we're going to get more into that as we get into this interview, but it's a long time coming to have you on the Freedom Train. Like we say, we're happy to have you here today and happy to get this information from you. So, you know, Pat having a little technical difficulties, and it's all good, but I'm going to go ahead and kick this interview off. You ready?
Let's do it.
So, you are the author of the book titled The Manuscript, as I just stated, and well, it's the manuscript. You are the author of your own design. So what exactly is your book about, and why did you decide to write this particular type of book?
This book is a compilation of anecdotes, short stories, and life lessons that I've picked up along the way that I believe every young man should master. I believe that, first of all, the title in itself, the manuscript, is talking about, first and foremost, the fact that you have the ability to script out who you decide to be. And these lessons that I've picked up have helped me to solidify that path of direction, in a sense. And so what I did was I made a book that was designed to be a informational type of thing. It's kind of like a directive type of book, in a sense, as far as what genre. And what I wanted to do was put information that I believe, like I said, just some basic stuff that every young man should know. And I added some questions and answers at the end of every chapter, and I added an activity at the end of every chapter, because it's more than just theory. You see, I want to be able to apply those theories and then act upon that, because this is what helps to implement those lessons that we learn. You know, it's by practice.
Okay. So you created a practical manual that can actually be put into practice immediately by the people who buy the book, correct?
Exactly. Yes, sir.
Okay. And before we go a little further, Pat having a little issues, whatever, but we do have on the line the Quiet Storm, Fitz Francis. What's going on, Fitz?
What's up, gentlemen?
What's going on? So I guess host Fitz Francis, the Quiet Storm, you better recognize. You know what I'm saying?
How you doing, brother?
I'm doing all right, sir. How about yourself?
Doing well.
Yes, sir. So, all right, Fitz, you on the line, man. You got the next question. Let's do this, man.
Can you give us some background information about you as a writer? And when did you first pick up the pen to become a writer? And what inspired you to, you know, on the creative writing process?
Okay. Well, I honestly started off, man, writing music, writing lyrics, man. I used to rap and perform my music. And so when I began to do that, I kind of fell in love with that ability to articulate what I had to say and do it in a way that allowed me to kind of play with words. And so I fell in love with that process. And so the ability to write has been there for a while, and I started doing that around 2002. As far as being an author, man, that kind of came about. The influence there was my mentor, Keith Turner. He's an avid reader, and he loves writing all the time, and he always shares stories with me or something that he wrote, and it was always inspiring, man. And one day I was at a health fair, and it was really boring. I saw an old man lean over to pick up some pecans, and in that instant, it took me back to like a nostalgic moment in my childhood, where my family was gathered around in the backyard, and you know, the breeze blowing in the tree and the leaves falling out the trees, and we gathering around picking up pecans, filling up our bags. And because I was so bored, man, I just whipped out my phone and just wrote a little essay about it. And I sent it to my mentor, Keith. By the time I got home, you know, I had an inspiration to do another one. And so I sent it to him, but within a couple of days, man, my phone was blowing up, and he was telling me about the feedback that he was getting. And ever since then, he's been encouraging me to write and just continue to write. So that's the reason why I've been doing it.
Okay. You know, our studio audience, they like that. Our studio audience like that. So, man, because with a book like this, and I guess with the experiences that you have had, and let me tie those two together with this question. Were there any particular life experiences that you had in this book or that kind of spurred you writing this book that you don't mind sharing?
Yeah, man. Okay, for example, one of the sections in the book speaks on writing with a purpose, mm-hmm, and oration skills. Okay. I had some personal issues. I was sick for a while. It was a period of over 6 weeks, honestly. I didn't have any insurance at the time, and I couldn't work. And so, of course, bills were piling up, and I ended up with an eviction notice on my door. So I began to write a letter. I began to write letters seeking help from organizations around town. And at the same time, of course, you know, I was still applying for jobs and everything. I wrote a letter, and the Tallahassee Church of Christ responded. And they were kind of hesitant at first because they thought that if they helped me now, they'd have to continue to help me. But God had blessed it to where within that time frame of shopping the letters around, I heard back from a job. And so I was able to then articulate to this committee my position that you know, this would be a one-time thing. Just needed help right now to get back on my feet. I have a new job I just accepted, and that'll help me to continue from this point on. And thank God they reversed their decision and decided to award me the money. And you know, I've been moving strong ever since. And I did put that instance, that scenario in the book, as well as many others. I like to share those aspects of my life, and I don't mind allowing people seeing to watch me grow.
Right.
Because in that growth process, we're gonna have some ups and downs. You know, you're gonna make your best choice, and you're gonna go forward. And sometimes you get it, and sometimes you don't. And if you don't, then you learn the lesson, but you keep moving. So that's what this book is about.
Well, I'm sorry. If you don't, I just want to ask this real quick. If you don't mind, what was the greatest lesson that you learned from that experience?
The greatest lesson that I learned from that experience is the need to have rainy day money.
Mm-hmm.
That was a concept that growing up, it was very vague, and I did not understand the full concept of what we meant by rainy day money. So if you don't mind, because this is a discussion, if one of you all would like to answer this question, what is your concept of rainy day money?
To me, rainy day money is, you know, money you have set aside for your expenses, you know, any event that you can't or that you don't have any extra, you know, your income stops coming in. So, you know, it's just money that you put aside just for emergency purposes.
Okay. Yeah, that's my definition as well.
Okay, so what's that dollar amount?
you go ahead, Jeff.
Well, I was going to say, I think it should be at least 10 to 20% of what you regularly make a year or something like that, you know.
Okay, so what I've learned since then was rainy day money, specifically for me. This is just like I proclaim in the book. This is just my opinion now, so it's not supposed to be the end-all, be-all. But to me, what it means is specifically writing out exactly every one of your expenses and saying to myself, I'm going to embellish just a little bit. If my rent is $600, I'm going to put $650. If my food bill is $200, I'm going to put $250. Just a little bit. Give myself a cushion, because we're talking about a time frame that is undetermined, that you may not be able to work. Once I come up with a dollar amount for how much all of my bills would be for a month's time, then I multiply that number times 6. So if that number comes up to $1,000 a month, now I'm looking at $6,000 is my goal for rainy day money. And that's just on a basic level, right? And that's just your food, your clothes, being clean, your roof over your head, making sure you have light. But for those of us who have vehicles, we have to still prepare for the things that go wrong on a vehicle. Even a brand new vehicle, you're going to have things that are going to go wrong that a warranty may not cover. The warranty not going to cover your tires, but for so long, you know, even a warranty itself only lasts 5 years, maybe 7 years. If you treat your car right, you're going to have it longer than that period of time. So you still have to prepare for those things that can go wrong. So one of the greatest lessons I learned from that experience was a detailed list of exactly what rainy day money was, and then having a specific goal or specific dollar amount that I know I need to reach for. And I look at it like, okay, once I reach that goal for 6 months, then I'm going to set another goal for another 6 months and continue that process, because you just never know.
Okay.
Along those same lines, who are some of the men that left the greatest impression on you? And how did you learn to incorporate the lessons, you know, that you took from those men into your own life?
Man, I would say, first and foremost, my dad. To me, man, and I'm biased in this statement, but my dad is the most intelligent, smartest, and strongest man I personally know. This is the person I can go and shake hands with. That would be, you know, first and foremost is my dad. And then I would say my mentor, Keith Turner, Sam Carter, Leroy Jackson, Dr. James Ransom. Man, the list can go on forever, man. I mean, there's a lot of people that I've come across in my lifetime. I'm the type of person that I picked up on this little nugget at some point. You know, if somebody has something that you need, you go and get it. You know, don't wait around, you know, for an invitation to go over and ask a question. So I would literally go up and just pull somebody's coat, man. Hey, excuse me, may I ask you a question? If I saw someone that carried himself in a way that I want to carry myself, I would go up and speak to him. the way that I incorporated those lessons was through consistent action, man. Being aware of what was taught to me and recognizing that scenario when I'm in it, you know, or recognizing a situation that I've already been prepared for and drawing upon that lesson that was taught. So I know how to carry myself. I know how to avoid a pitfall, or I know how to, you know, gain, you know, something that I need when there's an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I want to go back to your book real quick, because a book like what you have is not necessarily a regular put together book or something that we would normally see. I guess the formatting of your book. And so, without giving away all of your secrets, can you take us through the process of formatting the book and why you formatted certain chapters and certain sections of the book the way you did? And is it reading like stories or steps or things that you know, steps that people would have to take? Can you take us through that?
Well, as far as what I did to compose the book, one very important thing I did was to have a conversation with you, Joe, about what you did when you wrote your book. And I specifically asked, if you could go back to the beginning, what would you do different? And I remember leaving your apartment that night, mad as all outdoors, man. My head was on fire, because walking into your spot that night, I was saying, my book is done, I'm good to go. And walking out of there, I realized I didn't have nothing. And but that was good, because it took me back to where I needed to be. The questions that you asked me were instrumental, because it was, what did I want to do overall with the book? And overall, I wanted it to be a teachable curriculum. And that's the reason why I set it up in a way that there's a short story or a little anecdote or a little funny story at the beginning of some of the chapters. That kind of gives you some real life background on why I believe these next set of lessons were important to me. It may talk about some of the pitfalls. It may talk about some of those hard times. It may talk about some of those things that I had to do to overcome those hard times. And so I started off with that, because I want you to see that these concepts are not foreign to me. I'm not asking you to do anything that I haven't done myself. And so I put that in there. And then there is a definition of whatever that concept for that chapter is, because we must know the definition of the words that we're using. Because it's not about, you know, in order to be respected, when we meet people. For example, there's a section in the book when we're talking about professional development and getting ready for an interview. And there's a pie mm-hmm. chart that breaks down first impressions. And 55% of that is based on what you're wearing. There's another 38% that's based on the way that you speak, not necessarily what's coming out of your mouth. That's only 7%. It's the way that you speak. Do you pause when you need to pause? Do you allow other people to speak? And so these are some of the concepts that came about and that I wanted to emphasize when putting this book together. At the end of the chapter, there's questions to test the reader's knowledge, because I want to be able to go into to youth groups, church groups, some of the at-risk programs and the Department of Justice programs, and speak with the young men and teach these young men these concepts, because there are a number of tools that they could pull from this book that would help to prepare them for life as a man and self-sufficiency as well.
That's what I'm talking about, boy. Mama, proud of you, boy. Look at you, boy. After doing your thing, boy, look at you. You know what I'm saying? Pat, you back on the line, man?
Yeah.
Okay.
Y'all needed to get my attention.
Okay, raise the roof. Raise the roof.
Yeah, he did, and then he brought it back down. Then he raised it again. Then he down and raised it. But I see we got the Quiet Storm on, so
Quiet Storm.
You know.
Yeah,
you trying to steal my spot. You trying to steal my spot, Flash?
Nah.
You want my spot, Flash? Well, you
I might.
Ain't going to get it, because you ain't got it.
There it is. But since you back, Pat, you sound like you in third quarter mode. So you got the next question, man. Go ahead, do your thing, man.
All right, so man, you script. I gotta say that since I ain't said it because I've been gone.
Yeah, the script. The man you script.
Script. All right, so like some scrimp, some script, or scripple, script.
All that.
Got you. So, Mr. Ward.
Yes,
not
sir.
You, Joe. The other one.
Dang.
In your opinion, what are the makings of a man, and do you feel like positive ideas of manhood are becoming extinct?
The makings of a man, I would describe, in my opinion, as chapter 3 in my book. I say in this section, it speaks about what every man must possess. And I start off with these traits: character, being reliable, self-sufficient, honest, respectable, and recognizing that we are also protectors. Do I believe that the concepts are becoming extinct? I don't think so. I think that it's about time, gentlemen. I know that at least three of us on the line right now are over the age of 25. And I recognize that...
All of us.
So so then you all can... You may have seen this in your own experiences then, where we men naturally tend to embark on a path of enlightenment, truth, and finding out what's really going on, usually around the age of 25. And so for those of us who were brought up in households where these concepts and these principles were taught early, we learned how to carry ourselves early on. And so even when we was going throughout, you know, the 20s and you know, just kind of out with the boys and following the hip-hop culture and just doing what we do, we still had a foundation of how to carry ourselves. I'm trying to make sure I stay on topic now. I know there was a second part of your question. What was that?
You answered it, because the second part was, do you feel like positive ideas of manhood are becoming extinct? Well, actually, you were in the process of answering it.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't believe it's necessarily becoming extinct. I think that right now what we're seeing more of are the images of our younger brothers, you know, regardless of race, color, creed, that may not have matriculated to that stage in life yet. And then we know, you know, I know for myself, some of the peers I came up with just looking around in school, man, you know, some of the brothers just weren't taught. You see what I mean? And I don't necessarily think it's fading away. I think that I still see young men that carry themselves that way. And I still see generations that come after, you know, that come up after me, that are still respectable. I mean, we have organizations such as Distinguished Young Gentlemen, you know, that see into it, that make sure that they're gentlemen, that young men, rather, that carry themselves in that way, and just learning the philosophies of being a gentleman, you know, in itself, because that's more than just a word. It's actually, in a sense, a title, and that's what I say about the word man. It's a title that you earn. So I think that we're working towards it, and once we see more of it, once we see more men, then we'll see more reflections of men. And that's another concept, or another purpose for putting the book together, is to help to build men so that we can build more. Because when they see a man, then they can be a man.
Okay. You got to see it to be it. You got to see it to be it. You got
and
to see it to be
syllable,
it. Yeah.
The four-syllable word of the day is matriculate.
Matriculate.
Yeah, I didn't use too much, huh?
It's French for move.
It is not.
No.
You have me sitting over here like, is it French?
I'm a man. Hey, is it a difference between being a man and a man, like Gucci Mane?
Yeah, it's a difference.
Because if I say I'm a man, is it I'm just country, or I don't get it? It's all good, man. That's all good, man. See how
yeah,
y'all want to do
even
me.
I'm going to honor that with a response.
Look here, man. Look here, man. Okay. All right. So let me ask this question. As an African-American man, a black man living in America, do you yourself feel like black masculinity is under attack by the racist factions of white America? If so, why? And if not, why?
In my personal opinion, I say yes.
Keep it real, brother. Keep it real.
We have seen historically throughout time what has been done systematically to displace the black man from the home, prime example being the welfare system. In order for women and children to receive money, there cannot be a man in the household. And that was done systematically, and that's just one thing. We know countless stories of, and we have, you know, thousands of other examples of things that have happened against black men in America that can prove my point as to why I say yes. As far as why, I do not have a definitive answer because there was no declaration on black America in a sense. You know, there's no declaration of war against black people. So this thing has been done in a cowardly way and you know, kind of like as a spook, and someone in the shadows have been doing these things. And that's why there's policies and laws and things that exist in the way that they do. It's not an all-out attack on black people, like we're going to fight because you keep coming over here in my yard and throwing cans in my grass and I told you not to. It's not a definitive, you know, declaration against black men. It's a cowardly, you know, let's gossip behind his back, we don't like him kind of thing, in my opinion. And so that's why I believe it's going on. And as far as why it is, again, man, you know, there's so many reasons that why it could be, and I have no idea as far as the you know, one main reason, but I do know that it exists, and so we must be prepared.
Well, in my opinion, I think that it is part of the maintenance of white supremacy, because you don't spend so much time building a power structure to just let it fall just because, you know, the people who are oppressed by your power structure don't like being oppressed. So in my opinion, black men are, like, if you take it back to, like, the birth of a nation, and then, you know, like, the exact reasons why, like, the fear tactics or the idea of fear is placed upon black people, if you looking at the birth of a nation, if you go back and look at some of the information that Dr. Francis Cress Wilson covered in the ISIS papers, in my opinion, I think our masculinity is under attack constantly because white America lives in the perpetual fear that black America is going to retaliate. And when they, you know, when you, I would like, for example, I was watching a video earlier today, and a lady was, a teacher basically was violently arrested and handcuffed and thrown in the back seat of a car, a police car, and while they were riding to the station, the officer was basically telling her that white people are afraid of black people, like white people have a built fear of black people, like black people are violent. But if you really go back and look through history, you're going to find way more instances of white people being violent toward themselves and others than black people. And so to me, it's about the maintenance of white supremacy.
Okay, and you know, again, I say, one thing is this that I've learned too in life, man. You know, we have to, it's the serenity prayer in action, okay? Knowing those things that we cannot change, recognizing those things that we cannot change. So, okay, we know the fact that there is a movement against us. So what do we do? So in the book, for example, I wrote this book specifically for men, period.
And what's the name of the book again?
It's called The Man You Script.
There you go.
You are the author of your own design.
There you go.
So what I'm saying is in chapter 7, I speak about your trade and your craft. in my opinion, I said, a trade is a skill that we go out and acquire. And we can go and learn this skill, and this skill can then help us to move towards self-sufficiency. We have many examples all around us every day. We go to people such as our barbers. We go to our mechanics, and we go to many other people, the person who comes and work on our AC. Those are skills, and those are trades that a person has learned, whereas your craft, in my opinion, is something that was God-given. This is a talent such as singing or dancing or you know, some people can draw or something like that. So focusing on your trades, your skills, your abilities, what thing you have that you were blessed with that you can do better than everything else, and put your, you know, harness that skill, harness that ability, much like all of you have done on this line. You found your calling in life, and you're moving towards what that is. And so what I'm saying is, let's not necessarily, I mean, I'm not saying that we're not going to focus on what's going on, but in the meantime, let's prepare ourselves to where we don't have to go and deal with a system. Let's create our own. Let's build toward our own. Let's get to our own. You know, when we have our own skills, when we learn how to sew our own clothes, when we can put together, if we have our own tissue and our own toilets and our own, you know, bathroom fixtures, whatever, every single thing that we would need, let's create our own. And that way you don't have to deal with anything else or anybody else. That's my opinion.
I can dig it, and I like it. Matter of fact, I was telling this old redhead heifer just the other day. I wasn't. It's not a real person, okay? Don't.
Yeah, you good. Okay, you good. I mean, you should have said it. You should have just let it ride.
Ooh, Pat.
No, I got to say that because I don't want nobody to hear it and be like, ew, they blah, 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 and blue, 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 and blah, 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 and red, purple, green, yellow. No, listen, it wasn't a real person.
Fool.
Anyway, let me get to the story. What I was saying the other day to this person that wasn't a real person, that was, she was a real person, but she didn't have a red head, and she wasn't a she was a he. But anyway, you know what? Y'all just ruined the story. Whatever. I'm done.
Go ahead, bro.
Partridge in the pear tree, huh? There you go.
I like what he said, basically, about focusing on our own and building so we don't have to worry about what they do, because we can't really control them, but we can control us.
Right.
So I like that. So basically, that's what I was. What's the next question?
Fitz.
Do you feel that your book, the manuscript, can create ideas of healthy masculinity within a culture that mostly produces the idea of an unhealthy male?
Yes. Especially when we look at those characters, those character traits that I mentioned before in chapter 3, and then expanding even a little more, the concept of being a student of life and reading and increasing one's knowledge. I mean, that directly ties into a person's self-worth. When you learn self-worth, then that breeds self-love, and when there's a love for self, then that brings about those other concepts, so that honesty and respect and being reliable and being a person who is self-sufficient also comes out of that, because you recognize the fact that you do not want to be a burden on anyone else who may be willing to help you, but that's finite. You have a responsibility to yourself. And so these concepts, man, when we look at even in relationships, I speak about in the section that speaks about responsibility, pointing out that you have a responsibility to your significant other. You have a responsibility to be honest, to be forthcoming about what your intentions are and what you're doing on a day-to-day basis with whatever you need to talk about. You have a responsibility to keep yourself healthy. You shouldn't you shouldn't just live a lifestyle where you just do what you want to do and then you say, oh, my old lady going to take care of me when I get sick. You know, you have a part to play, and so does she. You have a responsibility within that relationship to make sure that whatever, you know, if there's an arrangement, if you all are living together, whatever bills that you're responsible for, you're taking care of them. Whatever she's responsible for, you make sure that it gets done. So those aspects, those concepts that we're teaching the young men, to know and to be aware of and to already have that system going on. When they do come in contact with us, you know, whether it be a personal relationship or a working relationship or other, they will know how to carry themselves in a way that people would want to be around them.
Okay.
All right.
Because, go ahead, Fitz, my bad.
No, I was just agreeing. I was, you know.
Okay.
I was in tune with what he was saying.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, me too. Because, you know, I'm big into healthy masculinity and helping to decrease violence against women and fighting the dominant culture of masculinity, which from what I've learned and what I've been able to pay attention to is especially the, I guess you could say, the Hollywood brand of our culture is very toxic, in my opinion. The ideas of, I think a lot of pictures and a lot of images that we see of black men aren't necessarily the best. And but I do think that we are having some sort of revolution as far as using these mediums, social media, podcasts, and other things to help change the image that the mainstream media and mainstream white America is painting of black men and have been painting of black men for a while. But more so in the angle as far as decreasing violence against women, does your book have any, I guess I was to say, definitive information that could serve as primary prevention information to help young men learn how to deal with their anger and deal with frustration before they get into relationships?
I would say not directly. Mm-hmm. More so indirectly, I do speak about, for example, when we come home from our day, we should allow ourselves time to just unwind from your day. Give yourself 10, 15 minutes without your TV, without your telephone, without anything else, no other distractions. Just kind of unwind from your day. You know, you might have gone through something or somebody might have ticked you off. Allow yourself time to process what just happened. And that way, you know, even if you need to write it down, if you got to go for a walk, you need to go hit the punching bag, or you need to do some push-ups or something, but you deal with that, and that way you don't take it to your spouse. And that can help, in a sense, to prevent, you know, an argument or blow-up of some sort. Also speaking on the section that speaks about being respectable, in that section we also talk about being considerate of other people, being a person who, you know, being respectable of one's wishes, and carrying yourself in a way that would also offer respect. You know what I mean? That would also make it to where someone wants to respect you back. So those are the things that I've touched on that I would say that kind of indirectly goes towards or will speak towards what a young man can do or instill within himself that would possibly help to prevent violent situations in relationships. But that's about as far as I got.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask, what does your book say about appearance? Like, does a man only wear suits, or can a man wear, like, you know, the baggy clothes of the 90s, or, like, is your attire, is that part of what it means to be a mature and successful male?
Well, I wouldn't say that your attire dictates that. Well, when we speak about wearing a suit now, you know, it's time and place for everything. And so the suit was in the chapter professional development. That's when we're talking about professional development. So in the business world, there is an attire for business, right? Okay, so if you were picked up by the, you know, Joe like the Dallas Cowboys, if he was to ever get an invitation to come and play one game with the Dallas Cowboys, I would hope that he wouldn't show up with basketball shorts and tennis shoes, because the attire would be his football pad, his cleats, his helmet, and his mouthpiece. It's the same for business. Your suit, your tie, your shirt, your shoes, if they can be polished, they should be polished. Why? Because these are symbols, gentlemen. These are symbols. This allows you to talk without opening your mouth. People who deal in the business world learn business etiquette. And when you learn the etiquette of business and when you learn the ways of business, these are the little secret things that can be done to weed you out of an interview process or weed you out of any process when you're talking about any process of selection if you do not pay attention to these things. We may, you know, I speak about in the chapter, speaking about professional development, I talk about a class that I took while pursuing my degree in healthcare management. And in that professional development class, we had to wear a suit. And I thought I was doing it, man. Somebody donated a suit because I didn't have one, and I went to Kmart, and I got my shirt with the matching tie, and I had my shoes that would bring out the tie. And I went to school, and my teacher told me, well, the professor said, well, you look nice, but you're not in business attire. Your tie is too flashy, and you don't wear the color shoes were like a cognac color. And she said, you don't wear those type of shoes for a business meeting. You wear a blue suit, you wear black shoes or brown shoes. You wear, my tie had multiple colors. You know, it wasn't overly flashy, but it had multiple colors. I did not know these things. So professional development and when we look at what your suit does and what your tie does for you and what it says for you, those things have, in a sense, they have their own agenda, you know. And so there's a section in the book where I'm talking about preparing for an interview. And so I'll even go as far as to emphasize the fact that a red tie is a blazing symbol of power and authority. You never wear a red tie on an interview. The same can be said for a yellow tie. You do not wear just a plain yellow tie. Now, you may wear a tie that may have a little yellow in it as an accent, which will then say, it may say to your employer that you are a strong, confident person, but you're still a team player. It's the language of business. So no, the suit doesn't make the man. The man makes the suit. And the man that knows what that suit can do for him, he'll invest in the right suit.
Well, let me ask this. Let me ask this question first. What was the age of the professor that told you about your shoes and your tie?
I would say mid-50s, maybe 60.
Okay. Do you feel as if those trends or those ideas about business attire is change? You think those ideas are changing now because we have this, like our generation, we're coming up. I know myself personally, I hate wearing ties. Like, I'm not even gonna lie. Like, I despise wearing ties. I wear them if I have to, but if I don't, I'm not gonna wear a tie. But do you feel like those ideas about the business attire and images of power are changing now with the new generation of leaders and entrepreneurs and millionaires? And the reason why I say that because, like, you'll see somebody like Steve Jobs who always gonna wear that mock neck and jeans, or you see the other business moguls around the world who are younger, and yes, I'm not gonna say they don't wear suits, but you can see like the atmospheres are changing a bit. Do you agree with that? Or
well, I first of all, I have to say, well, when you got money, you do what you want to do. And
okay.
So these concepts right here were really for the brothers who are trying to get somewhere. And in that sense, when you are coming up, you may have to work for somebody for a while before you can get out on your own and do your own thing. You know, Steve Jobs had to grind it out for a little while before he was able to blow up and then go on and do other things. So for those of us who are still moving along that path of, you know, towards our success, this is one of the tools that could help you get there. Honestly, to answer the question, when I look at the profession that I'm in the field of healthcare, When I go into a setting such as the VA or into one of the local hospitals around town, the young professional, the young men who are in professional positions, be it administration or an executive director or assistant director, they're still in the shirt and tie for the most part. Now, you do have times where they may dress down and they may not have a tie, but it's still usually your shirt and tie with a suit and with the solid color shoes. It just depends on what type of business you're doing. A prime example of that would be the legislature. When you look at when the legislature is in session here in town, when you look at the gentlemen that walk up and down North Monroe Street going to and from the Capitol, when we look at their attire, I pay attention to those guys a lot of times. And the shirt may be a little fancy. The tie may be a little snazzy, just a little bit. But it's still those solid colors of business. So it depends on where you are and what you're doing. Because there's also casual suits. There's leisure suits. There's suits that you could wear around. I mean, if you just like to wear a suit, you know, you could wear a suit and have your shirt with no tie and just wear it open. A lot of the brothers now are wearing more casual suits and leisure suits and wearing the hard bottoms. And so it is a fashionable thing, too. But in the business world, it's different. So it just depends on what you're doing.
Yeah, and the reason why I asked that, because I wanted to make sure see if you hit upon that point like you just did, depending on the industry that you're in, because I run across a lot of young men who, like if you're going to a McDonald's interview, you might not need to put on one of those suits that you're talking about.
No. I understand what you're saying, and I talk about that in the book as well with preparing for an interview, and we do emphasize the fact that you want to be able to gauge your employer. You know, you want to be able to go to that. You know, rarely have I applied blindly for a job, meaning I didn't know anything about the job. I didn't know what the dress code was. I didn't know anything about the culture of it. Most of the time, it was a scenario where I've visited this place before, or I know someone that works there, and I'm able to get some insight about what's going on or what's to be expected. And so, again, like you said, with McDonald's, you know that they wear a uniform, but it's not shirt and ties, nothing like, you know, professional, because you got to move around. You got hot grease. You got French fries falling everywhere. You don't need a suit on in that kind of scenario. Definitely not with hard bottom shoes with grease on the floor. It's an accident waiting to happen. So you want to be able to look and see what you're doing. I mean, even if you're going for a job in construction, maybe a blazer and a nice tie. I mean, a nice shirt with some slacks, you know, and maybe some hard bottom shoes, but not necessarily a full suit and tie. So I do, you know, emphasize that. And then the YouTube channel that I have, WB Ward Builder, also provides some elaboration on these concepts and some of the things. We can only, you know, you can only put so much in the chapters. I don't want to bore people. So I just put the seeds in the chapters within the book, and then we'll water that with some more information on the YouTube channel.
Okay. Say your YouTube channel again.
WB Ward Builder.
There it is.
And he just slam dunked your question.
Please say.
What's the channel one more time?
I'm sorry?
Can you repeat the channel one more time for the listeners?
Yeah, man. It's WB Ward Builder.
WB Ward Builder.
Yep.
Okay.
At alexander.com. Okay.
Yeah, you're going to the wrong end.
Right.
WB Ward Builder at Alexander. That's an email. Duh.
And you know, be on the lookout, because we were. The production team and I were looking at possibly changing the name and making it the Builder of Men. So if you see the Builder of Men, it's still me. That's the brand, man. That's the logo that we're going with, the Builder of Men. That is the concept that this book was built on, and that's the reason why this whole movement is being that it's in place right now, is because we need to build more men.
Yeah, it is. Well, you know.
What happened? And they might have asked this while I was gone, and if they did, you know, you could just say, shut up, fool. What happened to the men? What happened to the men?
Well, I mean, first of all, again, we talked about systematic displacement in the household. You know, and that started in the 60s. And so you can only imagine the traumatic effects that it's had. You can only imagine the complex situation that men are dealing with. Where do you go? What do you do? In a place where you no longer live in the household, so it's harder for the children to respect you because you don't live here. You see? It's harder for the wife to respect you because you don't make no money here. You don't bring nothing here. So, what happens to those brothers who want to be in the children's lives and still can't? I mean, I think that it's a lot that we're faced with. It's a lot that we're going through. And there's not enough think tanks. There's not enough places that we can strategize and create solutions. And then from those solutions, that's when you end the meeting, when there's a solution. And we actually go out and put that into action and then come back with the results of that and then make the next step. We need to be able to create those things, man. I think that there's a lot of wasted energy, man. Some of it we see being poured into the street life. Some of it we see being poured into other destructive measures, you know, drug abuse and addiction and other things, man. So we need more options, man. You know, we need a better outlook. We need to create our own society, man. I've been asking people that for years. Who is society, man? Point out one person in society that makes sense to you. Because y'all always tell me about some things that society said. But I would say if we create our own dang on society, based on our own opinions, our own beliefs, the things that we collectively believe are right, then we can change that concept. We'll have a welcoming place for brothers to want to be. I mean, society tell you man can't cry, you can't feel bad, you can't do this, you can't do that. That means you can't be human. You really can't be human. So we need to change this concept, man, of what's going on. We need to detach ourselves from what even, you know, from trying to even make sense of what's going on elsewhere and create our own, man. I keep saying that.
I follow. So this is what I propose, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in the house.
Right.
In the same neighborhood. And then, right, first we be real mean and nasty so all the people we don't like will leave. And that'll open up more houses for people we do like. And then we just take over the block like that.
Well,
I'll say this, gentlemen. Look at this. This is one of the concepts that also came about with the inception of this book. And this was a deliberate strategy for me to not include race within the wording of this book. This is my philosophy. If I live on a block and it's a mixed neighborhood, and my son, and I don't have any children, but I'm just saying hypothetically, if I had a son or if I had some boys and they made friends in the neighborhood, now, when they get together and they play with their friends, they're creating a bond. And we know that your friends that you go to school with and that you chill with a lot of times, you're going to be around your friends, in many instances, longer than you would your parents. And so your friends will tend to have a bigger influence on you than your parents will, depending on what has already been instilled in you as far as what's right and wrong and what's the consequences behind it. So my philosophy was this. If I'm only teaching my children, and if I'm only feeding them the knowledge of how to be self-sufficient, how to generate wealth for themselves, just as a hypothetical situation, if I was to move out of that house and move on somewhere and they was to take over that house and their peers still stayed in that same neighborhood, but they watched them go to and fro every day and they driving nice cars and they got refrigerator full of food and they throwing parties for the whole block, it's just a matter of time before they go from being friends to scheming on them to being a foe. Somebody knocking, they'll coming through their door. It's a matter of time because they may not have what I'm teaching my boys. See, I realize that with the concepts that my parents taught me, and those and that that whole village of people that God has blessed me to come across in my path so far, you know, towards manhood. You know, for me, when I look at whatever I would consider a hard time, really, in all honesty, I bought it on myself. Some of those things I saw, some of those lessons, you know, I was like, man, that don't apply to me, and I went and tried to do another way. Some things I had no concept of and didn't know, and I just tried my best, and I may not have made the right decision, and I had to learn from that. But I recognized the fact that from elementary school, I could see that there were some of my peers who didn't have the training to begin with. There were some of those brothers who did not have a choice. See, they did what they did because nobody else taught them nothing different. And so for those young brothers that are coming up that, you know, they're still impressionable, I want to get to them. See, Frederick Douglass say it's better to build strong children than to raise strong children than to build, to try to rebuild broken men. So I want to be able to instill this in the youth and the ones that are coming up or getting ready for that launch into manhood, getting ready to step foot on that path to manhood and that serious phase of life. You know what I mean? Because we do see that things are happening younger and young, you know, earlier and earlier within the generation. And so, you know, for us, if that path or that time of enlightenment was around 25, you know, two generations from now, it could be at 20 or 18. But they need to be prepared. Because a lot of brothers step out here and they get swallowed up, man.
Yes, sir.
That's real talk.
Yes, sir. Hey, man, look here. We feel that, though. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? If you don't feel that, you ain't got no heart. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about. Fitz.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Nah, go ahead. Say what you got to say, MC Patrick.
Fitz. Go ahead, Fitz. Quiet.
You got to spit it. You got to spit a freestyle real quick, Fitz.
I got to do what?
You got to spit a freestyle. Remember, you told us you was rapping. You was rapping with T-Pain.
Oh, I ain't never said nothing like that.
Nah, I'm just messing with you. So, Mr. Wallace.
Yes, sir.
Do you think you ready for what's about to happen next?
Born ready, man.
You born ready?
Let's get it.
You sure?
Yeah, man.
All right, because this how we do this right here, right? And I'm going to just show you how we do this, so you just sit back and relax. Pat.
What's happening?
Is you ready?
Alley-oop.
There it is. Let's do it then.
So, Mr. Ward.
Yes, sir.
If you were the all-knowing, all-powerful, all whatever ruler of Black America, what would you change and what would your message to the people be?
In my opinion, man, I would change the whole process of integration. We would go back to separatism, man. We have our own, we would do for self. And our message would be that we look out for our brothers and we take care of our own. That we don't need nobody else. And they can keep everything else they got. We got us.
That's got to be one of the most
sweetest, shortest, straight to the point answers ever. That was it.
I got my fist in the sky.
Hey, man, I'm a 160 spitter, man. You know that.
And I took my shirt off, man. Too.
Y'all got to check out Facebook and go to 160 Spitter, and you'll understand what that concept is about, man. You got to be able to, you know, fit what you got to say into a small space. So you got to get in there and get to the point, man. 160 High Spitter.
So you just said you could freestyle?
That would have sounded like.
Nah, I ain't say that.
That's what I thought I heard.
Nah. Y'all must be reminiscing on the early 90s or something today.
Yeah, that's what
y'all
it was.
Y'all his freestyle.
I think he just reminiscing. I don't know what that was.
Hey, man, I rose solo from state to state, from Jake's to Wake's to Cake's. No, oh, don't get me started, B. Don't get me started, B. All right, so.
No, but I'm serious, though. Like, we've had a lot of people tiptoe around giving that answer. Like, they want to give it, but they don't want to say it necessarily. I mean, he just said, fuck it. Look, separatism. Look, they got their shit, we got our shit. We ain't worried about their shit, they don't worry about our shit. Straight separatism.
I mean, because, honestly, man, when we look at it historically, we built this, bruh. What we need them for? What do I need you for? See, do I need you to... I mean, the only reason why you're still around now is to keep your foot on my neck. So if I get rid of you, bro, I'm going to shine even bigger and better than what I've ever done. Think about what we could do without the restrictions, without this red tape, and without all this harassment and stuff, man. We don't need them. We get our own man and we fly, man. Forget them.
Hey, man. That's how I feel, B. But, I mean, but see, to me... That's why, like, you giving your information, sharing your story, sharing your book is another powerful. It's another thing that's powerful within the community, because information that you are sharing is information that we ourselves didn't get when we were young. And I do applaud our generations, because I think we're taking strides that our parents may not have been able to take or didn't know how to take. Right. But we are taking these strides to better our communities, to put our efforts apart. I do think it's a lot of things we got to work on, but, you know.
Well, see, I commend you all, you know, for the work that you're doing. And you're right, man. It is our generation. And I've heard people in passing say that, you know, our generation was the last generation that had, you know, real parents, you know, where your grandma might be over 50, you know what I mean, by the time you come around or something. And you know, and knowing that our parents came from, you know, just a couple generations away from slavery, man, and that's not anything to brag about. It's to say that from that torment, that hardship, and those ways, you know what I mean? Those things were forced on us, man. So a lot of that stuff, though it was overkill as far as discipline is concerned, it kept you out of trouble. And so it began to get a little bit more lighter, you know. So, you know, our mama still got trophies from whooping behind from way back. So, you know, I'm just glad she had to retire. But it was preventative maintenance in my opinion, man. So it was what needed to be done.
All right. So can you tell the people where they can reach you on the internet? What's your website? What's your social media handles? Where can they buy your book? Can you tell us all that information?
Yeah, man, you can definitely find me at on my website is https wbwardbuilder.com, wbwardbuilder.com. Facebook, it's WB Ward, the Builder of Men, and I'm working on getting my Twitter and my Twitter account up. I'm kind of slow on the tweets, guys. I got to get up on the tweets, but I make sure to reach out through my website and my Facebook advertising. So please like my Facebook page and check us out at the website.
And your rap website, 160 Hospitals. What's that?
Actually, man, that you're gonna go to jewelsforthemind.com, man, and that's hosted by brother.
Dang on Keith Turner again.
Yes,
Keith know everybody.
He's going to keep getting plugged, man. So that's Keith Turner, man. You need to go to jewelsforthemind.com. You need to go and check out 160 Spitters. And also, man, check out his books, man. Check out the book. I got to say this, fellas. His book, $206 of Manhood, is a great compilation, man, a great side-by-side piece to have along with the book here that I have, the manuscript. Keith's book will be more of a narrative about those hard times and about those scenarios, and my book will kind of be the solution to those hard times, man. So I definitely want to get that plug in there, man. And when you do purchase the book, When you go to our web links page at the back of the book, you will also see On the Shoulders of Giants, because that's a powerful book as well that I believe our brothers need to be reading.
You know what?
Cool.
Bet Keith introduced God to Mary. What you say?
He probably did.
He probably did, man. He's been around for a while.
Yeah.
Right out of Perry, Florida.
Yeah, well, you know, Jesus was born in Monticello, so.
Mm-hmm. Yo, Keith was around there. He knows. So. Ladies and gentlemen.
I want to say thank you for having me, fellas. I appreciate you, extending me an invitation to come and talk about my book. To Patrick and my brother on The Quiet Storm. I got to learn your name, brother, first introduction. But I appreciate you, brothers, man, and I'm proud of you all and the work that you all have been doing. I commend you, man. My hat's off. And to my brother, Joe, man, I'm very proud of you all. And, well, I'm very proud of you too, man, and what you're doing, man. So keep doing what you're doing, man. It's an inspiration to me and many others. And trying to tell you, man, believe this. When I was going through some of them hard times and still trying to get this book done, thinking about the fact that my brother was already an author, man, that helped to push me. And it took me back to being in the house when we were growing up and listening at my brother listening to a song by Nas. And there was this one line that stuck with me, man. And that line was, my mother said, go and see the world for myself, and my brother shall follow. And I knew that when my brother was listening to that kind of music, man, I knew my brother was going to be a powerful brother. And so I commend you, bro, for all the hard work and dedication you put in, man. Salute you all, brothers. I appreciate you.
Appreciate it.
And where can we get the... Quiet down, audience. Quiet down, man. Where can we get the manuscript from again? The manuscript.
Manuscript.
It's script?
Script. Script.
Okay,
right.
Wayne,
like
a script call
that you write.
Script.
Right. Okay, there it is. All right. Well, again, you're going to go to WBWardBuilder.com. That's the website, WBWardBuilder.com. And if you go to the Facebook page, WB Ward, the Builder of Men, you will also see a link to where you can purchase the book right there from the website.
All right, so we done had him say this thing like 15 times, right?
There it is. I appreciate that.
So if you keep talking about where I go get the book, man, go listen to the podcast. We just said it all throughout the podcast. Go listen to the podcast.
He said it like 15 times, right? So there's no excuse.
It is. So man, appreciate you coming on the train. Like always. Oh, yeah. August 27th, here in Tallahassee, Florida, we're having a book signing. I'm myself, Wallace, Delatria Hollinger, Alicia Hall. We're all going to be at the Breakfast Buffet. I don't remember the address, but it's right behind the Lindy's and the old Farmers and Merchants Bank on South Monroe. We're going to have a book signing August 27th from 10 to about 12:30. So come check us out, get you some breakfast. And yeah, I did say breakfast, and read you some incredible books. Going down.
Hey, I got a question. Do y'all do book readings as well?
Well, we incorporating that.
Okay.
Why? Well, this ain't gonna hold you up no longer, man.
I appreciate you for having me, man. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
All right.
I just wanna sing. Fix.
What's up, brother?
All right, everybody, know you can freestyle now.
You said on rap.
Hey, you just hung up on our executive producer.
Who is that?
You know who it is.
When? Tell me. Look here, tell me who I have to start paying. I didn't know who that was.
Well,
honestly.
She said by now you should know her number.
Man, look here, Tammy. You know how many numbers be flashing up here?
She can't hear you.
I know.
You hung
That's
up.
Why I'm talking. That's why I'm talking like that.
Oh, that's why you talking trash?
Yep.
She calling back in, though.
Ooh, come on. Come on back.
You might want to take us off the air before she get on.
Man, Tammy, you can meet me. You can meet me in the square, okay? But, man, look here, man. Appreciate y'all riding with me on this train. We be doing our thing, man. Appreciate y'all every week giving up y'all time to get on this train with me, man.
Word.
Yeah, you know,
right. So, this interview closes out this month of July. So, to kick the month of August off, we have another author, Miss Carmelita Hawkins, who she do some everything. She has a law degree. She's a motivational speaker, an author. She do everything, man. So, Miss Carmelita Hawkins, that's who we're going to interview next week. So make sure y'all stay around for the for when we drop our podcast. And, you know, go to the Freedom Train website, www.freedomtrainradio.com. You can subscribe to the Freedom Train on iTunes and the Google Play Music. So there's no excuse, because we're making it convenient for the stuff to come right to your phone. Make sure you follow us on Twitter and Instagram at _ Freedom Train. And remember, the Freedom Train is sponsored by PAX Inc. And PAX Inc. is a black advocacy organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And for more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org. And with that being said, any parting shots y'all gentlemen want to leave the people with? Any words of wisdom?
No, I always say the same thing. Open the book.
There you go. Well, I'm going to leave y'all with a poem. No, I'm just lying. I see y'all next week. There it is.
Dips don't be wasting no time jumping on food.